Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hi there. I'm Laura Wasser, and if anyone knows how much divorce sucks, it's me. I've been practicing family law for over 25 years, and I've worked on thousands of divorces, from the top of the food chain all the way down to my very first case, which was my own divorce when I was 25. It has become my life's mission to destigmatize divorce and create a community around what is already a difficult time. We call it the evolution of dissolution. So welcome to the Divorce Sucks podcast, where we talk about breaking up, getting divorced, and moving on.
Good morning.
Good morning. We've talked the whole night through.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Hi, I'm Laura Wasser. Welcome to the Divorce Sucks podcast. This is the Sunny Side Up Report, and this is Johnny Raines.
Hello, America.
They don't just listen to us in America.
That's
Johnny.
True,
we are
true.
International.
Global.
The Sunny Side Up Report is where Johnny and I talk to you about everything that's happened during the week in divorces, marriages, makeup, breakups, and all kinds of other relationship current events. So, today we're going to hear how Hollywood keeps marriage alive by doing the work to become friends again with their exes.
Why a baby prenup is not as important as the conversations that precede it.
And I know this has been keeping you up at night. What's new in Danish divorces?
And more about gray divorces.
Yes. So first up, 8 celebrity couples who swear by marriage counseling by Dana Rose Falcone in Brides.com.
These celebrity couples credit counseling for saving their marriages and enabling them to be better spouses to one another, and include some of my favorite couples, including, let's see, which Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard, Kristen Cavallari and Jay Cutler.
Patrick Dempsey and Gillian Fink. You will recall that Patrick and Gillian actually split up for about a year and then figured it all out and got back together when their divorce was almost final, and they've been going strong ever since.
He says that you've got to keep at it, meaning keep at making the marriage work. You've got to communicate and stay open and not get lazy and not give up, and lots of sex. Look at that. He shares your same philosophy on how to keep a marriage alive.
We have Gabrielle Union and Dwayne Wade, Busy Phillips and Mark Silverstein.
And last but not least, Tori Spelling and Dean McDermott, who, did you know they have 5 children now?
I did. Every time they have a child, you bring it in and show me. Also, Bryan Cranston and Robin Dearden. So again, if you are one of those listeners who really only likes to take advice from people that are famous, go to counseling.
Absolutely. And speaking of celebrities, Camille Grammer, who's on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, she was on the reunion show of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and defends her $30 million divorce settlement and keeping her last name.
Was she at risk of losing her last name?
Well, a lot of times when people get divorced, I think they take their maiden name. But in this case, she decided to keep it. And her new husband, who she married last October, David C. Meyer, is totally on board with it. He said, "Your kids, both of your kids' last name is Grammer. I understand that. He has no problem with it."
She did take it off of her social media, interestingly. All right. Well, here's one I really like, because this is a group of people that are celebrities that I actually really dig. Lenny Kravitz opens up about his relationship with ex-wife Lisa Bonet's husband, Jason Momoa. So apparently the two dudes are friends. They get along. They were both at Zoe Kravitz's wedding earlier this month.
Paris.
And I love reading stuff like this. I know that is super important for my kids, that, you know, all the dads get along when we have Thanksgiving or birthday parties.
Right.
They're there. As you know, my mom's sick right now, and both...
Hope she gets well soon.
Both exes and my current boyfriend have all been amazing during this process. So kudos to the Bonet, Momoa, Kravitz family for being cool.
I'll say. Next up, moving away from the celebrity to the more mundane, what expecting parents need instead of a baby prenup. Now, before I saw this article, I'd never even heard of a baby prenup.
Okay, so just to clear this up, there is no such thing as a baby prenup. In fact, in prenuptial agreements throughout the country, you pretty much cannot or ought not mention child custody, mention child support. Those things are determined if and when those kind of orders are going to to be made if the couple splits up, whether they're married or not. So this is more of an idea of something that folks will work on and write up, or even just have an oral agreement about what each parent's duties are going to be once the children are born. And I love it because I think, once again, as we discuss so often in here, having those kind of conversations, conveying what your expectations are, either prior to a marriage or prior to the birth of a baby, is really important. I mean, I have had people come into my office and say, yeah, he wants custody, but he never once changed a diaper. And then dad will say, well, no one asked me to change a diaper. We had a baby nurse. We had you. Your mother was staying here, whatever. I would have loved to change a diaper. You know, maybe then in his second marriage, he's only changing the diapers. Have conversations. Make sure everybody understands what's expected. Obviously, things can change. Obviously, people can change what they want. But having a baby prenup and talking about, you know, who's going to do the night feedings? Mom really wants to be able to sleep through the night. So if she pumps, can dad do them? Having these conversations, I think it will lead to a more well-balanced relationship and parenting experience.
Absolutely.
They say other topics to talk about that might not be so obvious, how you will give each other breaks. Perhaps you can make sure each partner gets at least one night or morning out with friends per month. How you will handle potentially overstepping in-laws and your expectations for physical touch and sex. You may be coming from very different places here. And again, things could change. The document shouldn't be used against you. It may be that after birth, one parent decides that he or she really, really needs a little bit of a break from sex. You want to talk about that. Those are the kind of things that can weigh and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And instead of, you know, getting resolved magically, talking about them can really help.
See, it's not just breaking up that we talk about. We're also giving people advice how to stay together.
Next up, speaking of Europe, breaking up is harder to do in Denmark after the divorce law changes there. Now couples have to wait 3 months when they used to only have to just submit a form, apparently. They have to wait 3 months and undergo counseling before their marriage can be dissolved.
Which I think is interesting. I don't know about the 3 months. I like the counseling. As we've talked about, I always think it's very, very important that people have tried to do some kind of marital counseling before they actually call it quits. In Southern California, in the socioeconomic group that I work with at our firm, they mostly have been in some kind of counseling, but I don't know that everyone has. To make that something that people must do, and I can only imagine that, and this is what I've heard from professionals, if it's not going to save the marriage, it can at least provide the tools necessary for communication during the divorce. So I think it's huge. As you know, in California, we have a 6-month waiting period, which is one of the longest in anywhere in the country. It's certainly nowhere like, what was it in Ireland? 4 years or something like
ridiculous.
That? Just kill me. I mean, Jesus. But I do. I think it's interesting that Denmark is going in the opposite direction. And I like, we always like to bring things to here and what's happening in other parts of the world regarding divorce, triple talik, and those kind of things. I thought this was interesting because I didn't know anything about divorces in Denmark. One of the experts, Gert Martin Hald, who is a psychologist and associate professor of public health at Copenhagen University, helped devise the counseling course, which is now compulsory for couples with children under 18 before their divorce can be finalized, said, this is about reducing the human and financial cost of divorce. So it's not necessarily trying to make people stay together, but it's trying to figure out how to do the same thing that we do at It's Over Easy, minimizing the financial and emotional cost. So I like it.
I agree.
Tell us why divorce is destroying the finances of Americans over 50, Johnny, as our resident over 50 person.
What do you mean? I'm 39.
Oh, yeah. So you just look 39, darling.
Yeah, I mean, as we've discussed earlier in the podcast history, gray divorces can be costly, and they can actually leave spouses with less money, and it's very hard for many, especially women, it's pointed out in this article, it's very hard for people to recover unless they meet and marry someone else with money.
And I would just like to say, somebody was in here a couple weeks ago and said, oh, God, don't call it gray divorce. So we came up with new terminology, right? We've got the silver separation.
Yeah, the diamond dissolution.
Diamond dissolution. Old people being lonely forever. No, that's
and
not
broke.
A good one.
And broke and lonely.
Anyway, I just because I didn't read it, this is by Ben Steverman, and it was in Wealth magazine.
Yeah, the overall U.S. divorce rate is dropping, they point out, even as the number of divorces after age 50 surges. The reason is a generational divide, they posit. Americans in their 20s, 30s, and 40s are delaying, and in some cases, skipping marriage. Those who do get hitched are likelier to stay together. Meanwhile, baby boomers who caused the divorce divorce rate to surge starting in the 1970s, are continuing to divorce at higher rates as they age.
So if that is happening, check us out on At Divor Easy. We've got a great show for you today. It's the sex show, and we think you're going to like it. For those of you who have read my first book, It Doesn't Have to Be That Way, you'll recognize this quote from renowned transformational teacher Barbara DeAngelis. And for those of you who haven't gotten it yet, take note. Marriage is not a noun. It's a verb. It's not something you have. It's a choice you make over and over again. And if you and your spouse decide that you've evolved toward making a different choice, so be it. What comes next is up to you. And whether you have 6 zeros after that number in your bank account, or 3 zeros after that number in your bank account, or no zeros after that number in your bank account, or an NSF for non-sufficient funds, everyone has the same fears and frustrations. Will our kids survive this? Will I survive this? Will I ever find love again? Diving into the dating pool after a bad breakup or after a divorce is not easy. But at some point, you're almost surely going to be ready. And that means, hopefully, there will be sex. So let's talk about sex, baby. All the good things and the bad things that may be. And on this subject, there really is no one more knowledgeable than my first guest. She is a doctor of human sexuality, an author, and the multimedia personality who has inspired millions to make sex a priority. She is the founder and host of the SiriusXM radio show Sex with Emily, which is also one of the longest-running, top-rated podcasts right here on Podcast One and on iTunes. So please, welcome to Divorce Sucks, Dr. Emily Morse.
Hello. It's so good to be here with you.
A long lead-in. Sorry.
I love it.
So, I mean, we love sex. We love sex in marriage. We love sex after marriage. We love sex during marriage.
Sometimes during marriage.
Sometimes during marriage. Hopefully with the person to whom you're married. Sometimes not, which then leads to sex after marriage. Tell us a little bit about you and your qualifications and all that fun stuff.
Okay. I'm a doctor of human sexuality, and I have a graduate degree in sexuality, but I started a podcast in my living room 14 years ago because I realized that I've always been someone who's very curious about sex and relationships and dating, and I was always thinking I didn't want the traditional relationship. But what I realized was that I come from a divorced family. 50% of marriages end in divorce, and I thought it seems like sex is always the culprit. I thought, well, I want to figure out what this is about sex that makes it, why can't we have sex in long-term relationships? Why can't we sustain it? And it really started out just interviewing everyone I knew, experts about their sex life and relationships. And then, so I started that podcast 14 years ago, got my doctorate, and now I'm on SiriusXM. And it's mostly I'm giving advice to people. People are calling in, you know, married, gay, straight, dating, single, 18 to 80, because it's like everybody, this impacts everybody.
Yes.
We don't have great sex education. We're not taught how to be great partners. We're not taught how to be great lovers. We're not taught about our body. Sex education is abysmal. I had zero sex education growing up in Michigan, and I don't think it's changed that much.
Right.
And so really, I've just made it my mission on the planet to get people to talk about sex in a healthy way. That's like my bottom line is communication is a lubrication.
I love it. No, that's, I mean, look, we are speaking the same language because that's how I feel about divorce. I feel like nobody talks about it. And until it happens to you, you don't know much about it.
Right.
And that we have been doing it the same way for too many years, which is why I have this podcast. I have It's Over Easy. I want to change the conversation about divorce the same way you want to change the conversation about sex.
Yeah.
And perhaps if more people were changing that conversation, having that conversation about sex, there wouldn't be so much divorce.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that. When
okay.
you have people that call in, Emily, to the podcast and want to know how to kind of keep that spark alive, how to, you know, I've been in a relationship for 6 years now. And again, I have a hard time getting past five or six because at that point it starts to become a bit rote. So
exactly.
What do you tell people?
Well, this is what I tell people, but just so you know, that is completely normal. Anybody tells me, oh, it's been amazing for 20 years or 10 years. I it's not true. It's,
okay.
And I want people to know that you're totally normal. It's completely acceptable. There's something called the honeymoon phase, and that's a real biological condition that we are with someone for about 6 months to 2 years. And eventually after that, there's going to be a drop off. You know, when we're falling in love and lust is what I like. I really think it is that we have the spike, the love hormones, the dopamine, the serotonin, the oxytocin, and we're connected and it's amazing. And then we get comfortable.
Right.
We fall into routines. Things become rote. And then we are like, well, what happened to the magic? It was so amazing. And then we think something's wrong. It's broken, but we don't know how to talk about it. And so the first thing I tell people, and when they call in, I say, have you talked about it? They're like, well, I mentioned it once. I mean, no, it's an ongoing conversation that you have with your partner. And I tell people, start having the conversation about sex right when you start dating someone.
Right. And when it's still good. When there's still that dopamine.
Best time to talk about it. But we just assume, and we could go through this so many times in our lives, it's just going to be great forever because this person is my love. So I say, talk about it. And then eventually when people get into the rut, when they usually find me, is that I say, you know, talk about it and talk about it in a way that is not blaming or shaming. And that's in a place outside the bedroom. So, and you bring it up and you say, you know, babe, I love our relationship. I always see like the compliment sandwich because usually there's one person that's going to bring it up and you say, I really love our relationship and I love the sex we're having. Last night was really hot. But what I've been thinking is the compliment sandwich is that we could really together learn to prioritize our sex life and make it great. I want to be the best lover, you know, ever to you. So what do you say we work on it together? And sometimes you can throw in there, like if you have a specific thing, like I really think foreplay would be amazing. I know it really turns me on when we're kissing and making out and then we move into the sex. So you can throw in a little suggestion there in the compliment sandwich. So because couples come to me when they're losing the spark, it's more like they don't know what to do about it. So by saying, let's talk about it, is just opening it up. And then eventually someone could be right away. They might feel threatened or what do you mean by it?
Right.
It's like, it depends where you're coming at it. You could just say, let's figure out some things. There's a few ways to spice it up. Let's figure out together what amazing sex looks like. And a side note here before I get to the spicy things is that the problem with the sex conversation is that we think it's like a one-time thing. Or they'll say, I brought it up like 2 years ago. I told my partner I wanted to make out more and it doesn't happen and nothing changed. Well, because sex is like, if you think about it, it's like our health or our religion or our spirituality, our diet, our exercise. We work on that. Like our job, all the things that we are great at or that we care about, we prioritize. But sex, we assume, should be something incredible and amazing and just work on its own magically. And it doesn't. So committing in your relationship, like let's pick up this conversation together and let's work on being great lovers and partners to each other. So once you get your... Now, the reason why people don't talk about it is because A, no one's ever talked to them about it ever. They feel like if they bring it up, their partner might leave them. It makes them not lovable. Ultimately, we're afraid to be abandoned and not loved.
Right.
But really, like, they'll judge us. And so just saying, we're going to have this conversation in a way that's, like, open and ongoing. So the first time you talk about it, it doesn't have to be like we're going to cover everything. And then eventually you want to spice it up. So some things are, what are your big turn-ons? Like, what are three things you want to try in bed? Let's write them down and swap a bucket list.
Right.
If you don't know, you can go to a sex toy store. You can buy some books together. You can try toys. Because what happens in long-term relationships, the two things that happen is we miss the variety, and we miss the spontaneity. So if you can figure out little tiny things that you can do, like even bringing in a toy, talking dirty, going to, watching porn together, which I think is a healthy use for porn. There's a lot that aren't. And just finding ways that you could do something different. Having sex outside the bedroom. I mean, vacation sex is like, what? I mean, people are like, well, we were great on vacation. Well, recreate that
in
your home.
So, okay, what happens? And again, this happens in long-term relationships, long-term marriages, also just as a result of aging hormones. What happens if one party just doesn't want to have sex? And it's not just that the sex isn't good. And when you have it, it's good. But if one party just for whatever reason isn't feeling it, and how do you get back in the groove?
That's a great question. So everything we've been told about female sexuality and male sexuality is wrong. It's untrue.
Start there, listeners.
Okay? It's untrue. And there's a great book by Dr. Wednesday Martin called Untrue. And she wrote this book, and essentially it's a great starting point. But we're told that men crave sex more than women, that women just have lower libidos, that women are really into women want to be in a loving relationship. They don't have as much interest outside. But the truth about libido and desire is that women, we crave variety. We crave things to be different as well, but we don't. So we assume it's a low libido. Now, the truth is, yes, hormones happen. We go through perimenopause, menopause, and we do have it. Our sex drive takes a dip for sure. And there are things you can do. I have tons of, ideas about bioidentical hormones and using a lubricant. Like, lube is just so underrated. I think you should always use lube, and you should figure out what it is that can get you back on track, because I don't think that it's fair to opt out of sex in a relationship. You can't just say, I'm no longer having sex with you.
Right.
Because it's part of your commitment in a relationship. And so couples have to learn how to compromise Well, first figure out why that you don't want to have sex. Is it hormones? Is it medication? I mean, antidepressants, blood pressure medication. There are so many things that cause depression that cause us to have low libido. So figure out if there's anything underlying medically. But if it's just, I'm just not in the mood, it's not exciting anymore. For women, our brain is the largest sex organ. So what can we do to get our brain on board for sex? Because when we're on board, our body will follow. We just don't really know how to get there anymore.
Right. And it is this is a way of communicating, folks.
Yes.
This intimacy is a way of communicating. So to say, I don't want to have sex is almost as bad as saying, I don't want to talk about it. Or if you've ever had a partner say, I don't want to go to therapy. How frustrating is that?
I don't think you can do it.
It's the same way if you say, I don't want to have sex. Now, let me ask you this, because I have heard and said this a lot in my practice. If he/she is not sleeping with you, he/she is sleeping with somebody. I mean, people that come in and say, I just don't understand why we're getting divorced. I just don't get it. And I will often say, like, well, what was your sex life? Oh, our sex life. We haven't had sex in like 15 years. I'm like, well, hi. Why are you getting divorced? You've stopped having that communication. Which is key. And when somebody says, and I don't understand how she was sleeping with somebody else. Right. We haven't slept with her in 15 years. Yeah. Of course she's sleeping with somebody else.
Exactly.
Do people always stray? Or can you kind of get things back on track?
I think you can get them back on track. I don't think that people always stray, but for sure, if you have not had sex for 5 years, 10 years, people call in all the time, or a year even, there's a problem. When sex is a problem in a relationship, it takes up 90% of the issues. When it's not, it's like 10%. You're fine, you're maintaining, but people just think, well, we're best friends, we still hold hands, we would do everything together, but just not sex. Well, then you're roommates,
right?
Essentially.
Right.
So I don't think that everybody strays. And in fact, for people who do stray, and you know, affairs don't, you've probably seen this as well, they don't have to be the end, or maybe you don't, because they don't have to be the end of the relationship,
right?
People, it can actually repair,
right?
You can repair after an affair, but oftentimes it's too late.
Right.
Like too late to do the work, too late
too
to do the
talking. Too much water under the bridge.
Water
and too
under
many
the bridge.
Thoughts of whoever that other person was that he or she was with.
Right.
So let's talk about porn for a little bit, okay? Because we talk often about the harm of porn and what it does to women and so on and so forth, but it can be used as an effective tool in a monogamous relationship. Tell
Absolutely.
Us about that.
Okay, so in a monogamous relationship, I love the idea of the reason, again, sex is hard to talk about. We don't even know what we want. Like for a lot of times, women, I didn't know what I wanted when I started this show. I was like, I used to be the woman who was like, if a guy was like, does this feel good? I'd say, yeah, whatever you're doing is great. Because I didn't really know my body and how to explain it, or I just didn't want to talk about it, or I figured men knew more than I did. I used to believe, like, someday my prince will come and so will
I'll I. Just know everything I
they
want.
They know everything and they just
come
figure
and
it
so
out.
Will I.
Right? I was like, this is how it's all going to go down. But no, that wasn't actually true. So I feel like with porn, what's great about it is you can say, let's check out some, like this, let's just check out something together. Maybe it's, you know, couples porn or swapping, or there's some female friendly porn. Erica Lust makes amazing porn that's like has a plot. Women enjoy it. A lot of women enjoy it. And you watch it together as inspiration.
Right.
So would we want to try that? That's kind of titillating. Oh, I like what he's doing to her, how he's kissing your neck, how he's, you know, touching her thighs. Babe, that could be something cool to try. We need as many tools as we can get. People like books. I have a book called Hot Sex that you can open up to any page and be like, well, that would be something to try. Or people listen to my podcast all the time. I just tell couples, blame me, listen to it together. Or if you're listening alone, say, I heard this woman on the radio. She said to, because we just can't even, sometimes it's just like, we can't even get the words out about sex.
Right.
It's so, we feel just like failures. We don't understand. And so I think porn is useful in that way as a learning tool and as for titillation and arousal.
Right. So Emily's book, Hot Sex, over 200 things you can try tonight. So basically you just bring the book and you like go, okay, pick a page.
Pick
and we'll
a page.
Figure it out.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, people, I illustrate people. I took pictures of people having sex and then we illustrate it. So it's very non-threatening. It's beautiful images and literally any page you could be like, that looks interesting. And it's not too crazy. You don't need all these props. It's
right.
Just like, oh, I never thought that position, or, you know, trying to be spanked or whatever it is.
How
sex
about
outside.
Drugs and alcohol? How do those come in terms of props and?
I think a little bit of wine, you know, anything that can take. Here's the thing: anxiety, stress is the number one killer of our sex drive. If we are stressed out and anxious, we do not want to have sex. We're not turned on. Our brain is not on board. We're not being mindful. So yeah, a few glasses of wine, you know, I won't be the first person. Dr. Ruth was like, have a glass of wine, right? So that could help. If we do it in excess, then things aren't operating properly.
Right.
Marijuana, I think that weed can be a great tool for many people to do an edible or smoke a little bit. There's like a lot of great Foria makes a pre-sex lube that's great to put on. There's something called Veritas Farms. They do something that's like a spray you can put in your mouth to get you on board for arousal. I'm into it. I think it's really, because it helps with anxiety, takes the pressure off, and also some of this stuff like Foria can relax your vulva and kind of, you know, get you into the mood.
Speaking of anxiety, let's talk. A lot of our listeners are people who are either going through, about to go through, have just gone through some kind of a breakup, a separation or a divorce. Talk to us about getting back into that dating pool and what that means, because many of us have been out of it for a long time. Right. Now, all of a sudden, we've got online dating, we've got, and then
texting.
You're back out there. Is it different than it used to be in terms of how long we're supposed to wait before we jump in the sack?
You know what? I don't have any rules around like how long you should wait for anything, like to sleep with someone or to date again. But what I will say is you want to make sure that you've done your work post breakup. Think about
like a bikini wax.
Like a
wait, what's the work?
Yeah, the bikini. Your emotional work.
Oh, okay.
What? Yeah, definitely got that. A laser. Like, check it out. Do you still have a bush? Maybe right now bushes are not. I don't know. People, bush might be back.
Bushes are back.
Bushes are back.
Yeah.
But I think it's like, what did I learn in this relationship? What was my part? Like, have you been to therapy? Do you know what you want in a new partner? Not just because sometimes what we tend to do is we heal our past relationship in our current one. So immediately, we'll think, well, my partner was cheap and not loving, and here's someone who's spoiling me with the gifts and telling me I'm beautiful all the time. So this feels like the right match.
Overcorrecting. Right.
So you want to make sure that you don't do that, and you're really ready. Like, you've emotionally healed. You don't have the anger anymore. And you realize that, like, a lot of shitty stuff might have gone down in your marriage, but you are ready. So you just, and you know, it could be a month. Maybe your marriage was over before, right? Like, some
right?
people, they're like,
absolutely.
I've been gone for 6 years. And then you might be ready. So just figure out, truly check in, not just because you're lonely, not just because everyone else is telling you to. Take that time. There should be no rush to get back out there. So that's important. What were your mistakes? What did you learn? And who do you want now? Because what we might have wanted 20 years ago or 30 years ago is very different than what you would want now.
Yes.
And so, like, oh, I actually don't need a man to do all these things for me. I make my own living. I don't need someone to be a great father.
Right.
Right? Or
right.
To be a great wife, a mother. So just think about those things. And then when you get back out there, I think it has changed. So if you still feel like dating apps are just the wrong, like, oh, my God, it's just for hooking up. Not true. I mean, sure, people hook up on the apps, but I mean, you go on the apps and you just figure out which ones, you know, work for you. There's
right.
a few that are, you know, people really like Hinge right now. They like Bumble, Raya, if you get into that. But I think it's also like you make your own decisions about it. I think it's important to talk to someone right away. What happens on the apps is that people end up texting forever.
Right.
And then they're like, I think I found the one. And I'm like, okay, tell me everything. Like, well, we haven't met yet.
Right.
Emily, we've been texting for a month. I'm like, you can't get that month back.
Right.
And you've never met this person.
Right.
What if he shows up and there's zero chemistry? So I always say FaceTime before the date, talk before the date. And then tell if you're ready to date again, let everyone know that you're looking.
Okay.
Let your friends know that you're single. Like, let them know that, like, what you're looking for, like when you're looking for a job.
Right. Get the word out there.
Get the word out there. And I think put yourself in situations. So I think, like, the best way to meet people also is to say yes to everything for a while. Like, those events that you wouldn't normally go to, or I don't love my neighbor, but maybe if they're having a barbecue and they're annoying, they might have some cool friends.
Right. All of
and
their friends
single
are necessarily
people everywhere.
Annoying. Right.
Exactly. And maybe they're getting divorced now, too. I mean, there are more single people on the planet and definitely in America than ever before.
Does it have to be, like, I'm a big fan of grudge fucking, okay? It doesn't have to necessarily be the next person with whom you're going to hook up. It can kind of just be like, this made me feel better. This is a tool for me, even if he's a tool.
Right, exactly. As long as he has a tool.
Right, exactly. To get through this. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the person that you want to spend time with. It's just, it is actually a way of kind of getting through the situation.
Yeah,
is that a problem?
Get over thing. I feel like it's not as long as, so here's the thing. Casual sex, one night stands are not for everybody.
Right.
Like, you have to know if you have that constitution.
Right.
Because some, and I hear this from women more than men, but I also think that you can flip this script that, oh, well, I can't have sex with someone because I'm going to fall in love. If I have an orgasm, I get attached. And so if you can have emotionally detached sex and just kind of realize, which I encourage people to check it out, because I think it can be amazing to get out there and get yours, ask for what you want, have an orgasm, feel loved again, feel touch. Like, we miss touch.
Right.
We miss the oxytocin. And if you can say, whatever happens with this person is fine, I got mine, I treated them well, and I'm out. But again, not for everybody.
Not for everybody, but particularly, guys, if you're getting out of a relationship. Now, it could make you feel shittier. There's no question about that. But I think when you were saying, Emily, that we are maybe looking for different things, very much so now. We're not, like, we're not in high school or college. We're not going to get a bad reputation. We're not,
right.
We're not looking for somebody who's going to really care about what our morals are necessarily or how soon we had sex. We're out there. We're adults most
right.
of the time now. If you've been through a marriage or a long-term relationship, you have very different kind of priorities. And so I always say when you're out there dating again, you're kind of re-presenting yourself. Same thing goes for sex.
Yes.
Maybe take a chance. This is the first time I'm having sex with a new person who's never seen my C-section
exactly.
scar before. I may never see him again, but how am I going to handle this?
Right, exactly. Like, what did you need in your relationship that you weren't getting? I mean, ask for what you want, you need. If you don't know, like, there's a lot of women, you know, who don't, I mean, to me, a big part of my platform is talking about masturbation, because another key thing for getting on board, you're getting your libido back, is masturbating, even if you don't want to.
So
it's like going to the gym.
Sex begets sex, is it
sex
true?
Sex begets sex.
Okay.
The more you masturbate,
I knew that was
the more
true,
you
think
it is true.
I say
the more
it, but I'm never really quite sure. I needed an
right.
expert to verify.
No, but it's totally true. And I think that that's the other reason. So when I say keep your brain on board, keep yourself like the pilot light lit. So figure out what feels good to you. Use your toys, and the more you do it, you're going to want to. So when you're with a new partner, you can be like, this is what I like. You know, this is what I'm into. And learn to take control again. And I wanted, you brought up something interesting. I have a friend who's 50 now, and she's dating, just recently dating again, divorced. And she was like, oh, but I don't, she said this thing to me, well, I don't want him to judge me, and should I wait 3 dates? I'm like, we're not 20.
No one's
like,
judging you,
no
baby.
No one
Go.
Cares. Like, right. get out. It was like an old, she had to realize that she had to update
right.
the conditioning.
Right.
It just can be really hard to do. It's like, no one cares. Go do you.
Yeah. When I was in high school and college, I guess a bit, we kept like a list, me and my like 3 best girlfriends of all the people.
Yeah, same.
And then, you know, we ran out of paper in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But anyways, what happened was, I have said to friends, like, we're not keeping a list anymore. Nobody cares. And guys that are like, a notch in the belt, it may be a little bit different for guys because you guys haven't been conditioned to like be demure and save it for the one.
Right.
But I definitely think there is a certain liberation in being someone who's been married once, and you don't
yeah.
necessarily have to worry so much about what he's going to think of you. Get in there.
Exactly. And confidence is the sexiest thing we can, you know, present in the bedroom for sure.
What's love efficiency?
Okay, so this is just a great hack for couples who call in and they're having struggles. And I say, do you know your love languages? So there was a great book written by Gary Chapman.
Okay.
Like 25 years ago. He was like a pastor, and he did like in churches, he would teach couples before marriage, which sounds like it's not religious at all, though. And there's 5 primary ways that we all experience love, that we feel love. And the problem is, we typically give love the way we want to receive it. So I'll give you 5. And typically there's 1 primary and a second one that's secondary that we feel like, yeah, that works. And then when there's a quiz you can take too. And typically our partner doesn't match ours. It's great if they do. So there's gifts. Your partner surprises you with the most perfect gift and you feel so loved. But he messes up on your birthday and you've never been so angry. So gifts, words of affirmation. Babe, you look beautiful. You're sexy. You're hot. You're successful. Quality time. You have your date night. There's no phones, just the 2 of you. Acts of service. You saw that my gas tank was low and I had a flat tire. You fixed it for me.
Everyone in the studio is writing right now.
Oh,
I
yeah.
love it. Okay.
And then there's gifts of cervix. Oh, physical touch.
Okay.
You need to be touching. You want to hug. When you're not touching, you feel like we are not in a loving place. So just hugging after work makes you feel connected. So typically there's one. And what happens is, for example, I'm physical touch and words. So I was dating someone and I realized that when he came in the door, like he was not as much words. And I felt like we had just started dating and I knew I looked, I was like sexy. I hadn't seen him in a while.
Right.
It was early on in the relationship. And I was like, we had sex and it was amazing. And then I said to him, baby, you think I look good, right? He goes, oh my God, you're the sexiest. So I'm like, okay, good. I need to hear it.
Right.
He could have brought me a gift. He could have done the thing. I wouldn't have cared.
Right.
But I needed to hear that.
Right.
And I'm confident. But for me, like, whatever, we can look at that as love. And we were both touched, which was great because I love to touch. So I corrected. And then he would send me texts in the morning. It sounds very silly, but.
No, I get it.
And
That's
my friend,
great.
Her thing is
Acts of service.
And
so
she,
acts of service.
Right. And she's so pissed because her husband does everything for her. But she's like, there's a heavy package at the bottom of the stairs. Why doesn't he bring it up for her? Why didn't he hang that picture on the wall? Now, they could hire 16 men to come over and hang it. But it was the act of him seeing she needed it.
Right.
They were married 15 years. And you know what I'm saying? But he just wasn't getting it.
Right.
So these are little ways that you can just take it with your partner. It's on my website, sexwithemily.com, or wherever. You can Google love language quiz, and it's just like a 5-minute quiz, and it can just be a breakthrough for many people.
I love that.
Yeah.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar, you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch how your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions, navigation, moonroof, watch as they pump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So, when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. True cash offer not available in all areas. This is Divorce Sucks, and I'm your host, Laura Wasser. One piece of advice I share with people who ask me how to avoid divorce is to communicate. It's a huge thing, not only if you're in a relationship, but if you also want to make it work after you've split up. If you still have a connection like kids or a business partnership, you have to be able to communicate. And whether you are in a serious relationship or just something casual, here's another piece of advice I will share with you to keep things interesting. Carve out date nights. Have sex. Sex begets sex. Not only can I attest to this myself, but so can my guest today, Dr. Emily Morse, who holds a doctorate in human sexuality. And as a sexpert, Emily is known for her non-judgmental advice, accessibility, and humor. She's also the creator of the workout app Kegel Camp, available on the App Store, which provides easy-to-do exercise to improve overall sexual health for women and for men. And joining our steamy conversation now is a trailblazer in the world of orgasms. She's the CEO and co-founder of Unbound, a rebellious sexual wellness company with a mission to destigmatize feminine sexual pleasure. She's also a colleague of one of It's Over Easy's angel investors and advisors, JJ List. Hey, JJ. Welcome to Divorce Sucks, Polly Rodriguez.
Hi, glad to be here.
We love having you. This is really, really fun. Tell us a little bit, like, from where it all began. How did this whole situation come about? This is not your normal, path towards work. So tell us how it all happened for you.
Yeah, that's what my mom says. She asked me that all the time, too.
I'll bet.
Yeah, so my background was working for Senator Claire McCaskill in Washington, D.C., and then in strategy consulting on Wall Street, and then at a dating startup. So I very much identify with all the dating woes and all the apps. But when I was 21 years old, I actually went through a colorectal cancer diagnosis.
Oh.
And the first part of my treatment plan was to go through radiation. And as a result of radiation, my doctor sat me down and said I would never have children, but they failed to mention that I was also going to go through menopause. So like many women and many stories that I've heard since, I found myself at a store on the side of the highway in St. Louis, Missouri, where I grew up, trying to shop at just a seedy place next to the airport. And it always stuck with me as a really horrible shopping experience. And so fast forward 10 years later, and we started Unbound as the online destination where people can shop for these products and read content and feel good about the shopping experience as opposed to like an undercover sting operation and embarrassed and overwhelmed like a lot of people do when it comes to going in store.
I love it. Okay, so I wonder if you ever came to any kind of a conclusion as to why these places are always near the airport. It's like people are on their way out of town or back into town and they have to stop and buy a sex toy?
I think it's because, well, the industry is fascinating, and I won't get into all the like crazy business complications, but it's a really underutilized, under-resourced, under-financed industry, and so you have a lot of struggling small businesses, and so my guess would be that the real estate is cheap near the airport.
Right.
And so the stores tend to kind of reflect the category and how it's been historically.
Right. So now with Unbound, so this is a direct-to-customer brand in sexual wellness, yes? Mm-hmm. And I think the New York Times listeners called it the ideological center of the tech-savvy, female-led women's sexuality movement, with over 50 products created by a team of 10 women in New York City. That's awesome. So I'm on it right now, and I'm looking at the Bender, the Bean, and the Palma Vibration Ring. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about these. This is fascinating. I got to get on the site, I think, maybe. Matt probably is listening.
So the whole goal was to really make affordable products that were also elevated in design. And I think it was really interesting. After 50 Shades of Grey came out, there was this massive increase in interest in BDSM and I think in sexual wellness products more generally. But when we were in the market, we found that a lot of them were clunky or not necessarily aesthetically designed. And so we really wanted to kind of bring a new lens to a category that often, you know, had just phallic penis dildos in it. And
right.
So for us, it was about how do we design vibrators that are beautiful, but also body safe in materials and are affordable. So our entry level vibrator is $18. And then Palma, which is 14 karat gold plated and has all these amazing technology features, is $128. But we really try to make these products accessible both in design and in price point.
So the Palma vibrator ring, What does that do? You wear that on your finger? Do you take it off to use it, or do you keep it on?
You can do either.
Okay.
Palma took us 2 years to develop, and it was interesting because a lot of the feedback we got from men and male partners was this fear of being replaced and this interesting correlation with the size of a vibrator and feeling like it's bigger than them or it's going to replace them. And so a lot of what we thought of with Palma is how can we make the transition more seamless to incorporate this either in masturbation or in partnered sex. So with Palma, because it's on your hand, it's a lot easier to use that for clitoral stimulation, which 70% of women need in order to reach an orgasm, but often don't have during penetrative sex. And so a lot of what we think of is how can we make these products more fluid and easy to use in our everyday lives? And also it's kind of like fun to just walk on, you know, like I wear mine all the time and people be like, nice ring. And it's up to you to decide whether or not to tell someone, oh, yeah, it's actually a vibrator.
Is there kind of like a wink sometimes if you run into someone who like knows what it is?
Oh, 100%.
I love it.
It's also the best party trick. People lose their minds when they'll be like out at a birthday party.
I want to go to the parties Polly's going to. So another one that I love is the congratulations on your divorce from the Refinery 29 article, Genius Gift Solutions for Unusual Occasions. So this is an $18 zip vibe, and it is a divorce gift that you can get somebody because I guess when you get divorced, it's time to kind of get out there and start getting a little bit crazier, and you also don't have to depend on anybody else. Has this been a big seller?
Yeah. I mean, I think divorce is a really interesting one because I think it's an opportunity for us to like reclaim our sense of sexuality. And a lot of what Emily said resonated so deeply with me because it's oftentimes we don't give women permission to just masturbate and figure out what feels good for them. And so I think it's an acknowledgement that like you don't have to be in a monogamous relationship to be sexual and to have orgasms. And I think that that's an important message regardless of whether it's divorce or anything else for women to encourage each other to explore that part of their lives.
Talking about sex education in the USA, I have a 14-year-old son, and I have been speaking with him and some of his friends, much to his dismay and embarrassment, about sex because I feel like they are moving more quickly than other kids or than we did when we were kids in terms of the vaping and the drugs and the alcohol experimentation. But I am not seeing them moving as quickly when it comes to sex. And I've spoken to them and some of the other parents about the fact that teenagers are now communicating and reaching a certain amount of intimacy with each other, both on social media and with Snapchat and texting and stuff like that. But they are not having that same kind of touch. Also, porn being inserted into their world gives them kind of a skewed idea of sex. Is this something that you have found in the, you know, kind of market studies that you've been doing, Polly?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really complicated multi-pronged issue where public schools, sex ed is still as bad as it's always been, if not worse. Only 13 states in the U.S. require sex ed to even be medically and scientifically accurate by law. And then you have a lot of abstinence only, and the average age that kids watch or are exposed to porn in the U.S. is between 8 and 11 years old. And that's just a result usually of Googling something, and maybe it's a typo or maybe it's a related search term, and all of a sudden they've discovered porn. And so I think it's about, you know, even if your son's embarrassed and it's to his chagrin for like 15, 30 minutes today, he'll definitely thank you for it years later when he is educated and informed and feels like he can have an open, you know, communication with a partner or a friend about his sex life. And I think, you know, it's a hard issue. One of the most encouraging things that I see happening at Unbound is moms who are buying some of these products for their kids.
Really?
Because we teach young girls in particular that, like, they're just not supposed to be pregnant, they shouldn't get an STI, which are, it's important messaging, but it's not holistic messaging. Like, we're not teaching what the clitoris is in,
right,
sex, in sex ed. We're not teaching anything about pleasure. And so we're teaching women that, like, their pleasure is an afterthought. And I think we have to reframe how we're having these conversations with kids and also with ourselves, because social media, there was a fascinating study that came out within the last 3 years that showed millennials and Gen Z, our ability to identify empathy in another has decreased 45%. And that's largely because we're living our lives through screens.
Right.
And so when we're not seeing each other, communicating with each other face-to-face and picking up on social cues, our emotional intelligence and our ability to, like, connect sexually as a result decreases. So it's really fascinating to kind of see the different shifts and how it affects youth and also adults.
I'm, as I said, I'm on your site, and as somebody who has an online, we have a divorce website, so I'm always really interested in graphics and how to make it easy. I'm looking at it. So you have all of these, you have the stars, how they've been rated by people, but then you've got all of these little icons showing things. Polly, tell our listeners something about it, because I think it's pretty brilliant. You see a picture of something, which is great, but then you also have, you know, things like anal, glass, massager. Tell us what the things are you've got. Are they telling purchasers, users, what it could be used for, what it's made out of? How does that work? It's kind of like when you're at a restaurant, guys, and you see like a little jalapeno means spicy, and if there's a cow, it means meat or vegan, whatever. Tell us how these work and how you came up with them, because it's pretty brilliant.
Yeah, it's the exact same. It's like a menu for sex toys. I think it's comparison shopping. There's a huge, when I went to first buy my vibrator, I had no idea what I was even looking for or what the important attributes were. So we try to really make it easy for people to see the differences between the products, whether that's how many different vibration speeds it has or if it's, you know, good for clitoral stimulation versus internal stimulation or even dual stimulation, which means it will stimulate both. These are all features that I think, if we don't even know what questions to ask, how can we know what answers to try to get to figure out what works for us?
And absolutely.
So, yeah, it's like a little key or a rubric to hopefully help you figure out, oh, like, I actually would prefer to have a rechargeable, like, vibrator versus a battery-operated vibrator because I need to stop stealing the batteries out of my TV remote. And there's nothing worse than the batteries dying while you're in the middle of using it. So
yeah,
that's not good.
That's like coitus interruptus for sure. Another question, return policy, I have to ask. I mean, so can they send these back, or is it once you buy it, it's yours?
We don't ask people to send it back for just sanitary reasons,
right,
but we have free returns, no questions asked, but we have a less than 2% return rate. So people love these products. If anything, the most common return issues we have are the dog chewed it up, or they used it so much that it broke, in which case we'll replace it for free.
I have such a good story. So my grandmother, and may she rest in peace, she died when she was 97, and that was already about 10 years ago. She was just an amazing woman. She and my grandfather were total hippies early on, and he predeceased her by many, many years. And she had a couple of other boyfriends and stuff. She was always very, very sexually oriented. When I was in college, she sent me a book, A Woman's Guide to Masturbation, that clearly had been very well used, lots of folded pages. And she actually told me that she got it at a used book sale, but then she also used it a lot. I was was like, oh, that's so gross. But okay, thanks. I mean, the best intentions. And then I think it must have been when I was in my 20s. I had lunch with her one day and she comes, you know, she's like old Jewish grandma. She has this bag and she says, I brought you some things that I want to give to you. I've seen your boyfriend. I think you might be able to use them. When I first purchased them, I think I was a little bit too generous to your grandfather in terms of the memory of his penis size. And she pulls out this bag of like literally 7 or 8 huge dildos and vibrators. And I said, Grams, first of all, we're at a restaurant. This is happening. Okay. I'm like waiting for, you know, Ashton Kutcher to come in with, you know, and I said, I don't want your used sex toys. Thank you so much. And she's like, I don't understand why you're being so picky about it. I put them in the top rack of the dishwasher. Is that how I'm, this was all a warm up, not only to how cool my grandma was and how mortified I was, but how do you wash these things? I guess is my bottom line. Top rack dishwasher, Polly. Is there a, you know, a baby wipe? How does it work?
Okay, well, first off, your grandma's a G.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have met her.
Yeah.
She sounds like a true revolutionary. But it depends. So for dildos, usually you can put them in a dishwasher.
Okay.
So long as it's, you know, you want to look at the quality of material and make sure that the dishwasher is safe. But for most products, especially if they have electronics, if they're battery operated, it's better to just wash it with warm water and soap. It doesn't have to be a really complex thing. There are also a lot of like cleaning wipes that you can buy. We sell them on our site called Bushies. But it's pretty simple to clean vibrators. You just want to make sure you're using warm water and soap and washing them frequently because you want to make sure that you're getting any and all bacteria because obviously you don't, that can result in infection.
Yes.
So,
we don't like
pretty,
bacteria.
Pretty simple. There are a lot of people who wash their dildos in the dishwasher. So
See?
Your grandma was definitely onto it before it came mainstream.
Oh, Etta Wasser, God bless your soul. Today's guests joining us on the Divorce Sex Podcast are two of the most powerful voices in the modern sexual revolution. We're talking about sex, and the conversation isn't complete without discussion of the big O. And regarding orgasms, did you know that according to a recent Psychology Today study, 39% of women and 91% of men said they usually or always experience orgasm in partnered sex? Why? God, there's a big disparity between women and men here. And that's what is known as the orgasm gap. Another study with 15,000 college students found that the orgasm gap is even larger in hookup sex than in relationship sex. In college student committed relationships, there is still a 17% orgasm gap. Strikingly similar statistics were found in a survey of about 3,000 single women and men in the U.S., ranging from 18 to 65 years old. The results of this last survey found that when having sex with a familiar partner, women said they have an orgasm 63% of the time, men said 85% of the time. So, Polly and Emily, what do we make of this?
The gap is real, and it's because women take anywhere between 18 minutes and 40 minutes to orgasm, and men take between like 8 and 12 minutes to orgasm.
Uh-huh.
So there's actually like a literal gap.
And they're done.
So right. We require, that's why I say foreplay is not a suggestion, it's a requirement. We actually, men and women get aroused very differently. We get turned on differently. You know, men have spontaneous arousal, women more responsive. We need to like be responding to stimuli. Men are like, boom, I'm ready to go. So that's why there's the gap. I think that we, like what I was saying, everything is just very misunderstood about that we need to focus on the, you know, not that sex should be all about the orgasm, but it should be about, you know, finding out what turns your partner on. I mean, the clitoris is where like all the magic happens, but if you just go right into penetrative sex, for the majority of women, they're not going to have an orgasm.
And then, Polly, do women fake it?
Yeah, I mean, the sad statistics are that up to 80% of women say that they've faked an orgasm at least once. And I think it's, you know, there's so much pressure that we put upon ourselves in sex in terms of reaching an orgasm, which obviously the majority of us all want because it feels so great. But I think Emily's earlier comment about just like communication is so important, and the vast 70% of women need clitoral stimulation in order to orgasm, and 40% report chronic difficulty achieving that during regular penetrative sex. So I think it's highlighting these numbers so that women don't feel like it's just them, because that's one of the most common questions we get, which is like, am I normal? I have trouble, you know, reaching orgasm. And the answer is everybody's normal, but what everybody needs in order to like reach orgasm takes self-exploration and communication with a partner.
Right. And ladies, figure it out. I mean, God, you're in there. Let's get this party started.
Like, make that a priority.
To Emily, your recent podcast on guilty pleasures, fetishes, and ex-sex. Tell us about how to get your needs met when the focus is on your partner's fetish and what it means when you're having sex dreams about your ex. Oh, no.
Oh, God. Yeah, right? Well, first of all, a fetish is something that's required for orgasm. So if I have like a leather fetish, it means that my partner needs to be wearing leather shoes, have a leather jacket. So that is really a fetish is it can be challenging. So you have to be able to say, this is something that I actually need. It's not just like you're into it.
No,
it's like
you need it. That's the definition of
so
fetish.
So what do? You figure out, you compromise. Everything is compromise. Even sex is compromise. So saying, okay, I'm going to come along with that. And here's what I'm going to need. So really you just kind of figure out and you have to, and if you're with a new partner and you don't know how to bring it up, I don't think you have to, like I said earlier, you build on the conversation. You could say, I want to talk about arousal. What turns you on? I mean, but if that is your fetish, I think it's important to let your partner know sooner than later that that's what you're into.
Can fetishes change? Like if I had one fetish when I was with one person, but now I'm with another person and I really never, ever want to see him in leather. Does that happen?
No, fetishes usually get developed in childhood. So we don't know what it is. I mean, they don't know exactly, but something could happen when I was like 6 years old and there was a guy wearing a leather jacket or eight. And I somehow linked that up to like sex or arousal and turn-ons. And it's really, it's hard to rewire our brain in that way. So typically they're with you for your life.
Okay.
A fetish. Turn-ons are different.
Right.
Like I might have really been into,
Surfers.
And now I'm into not at all surfers, right? Like have a job. So it changes over time what you might be turned on by. But I think the most important thing is that we explore. Like we figure it out and we articulate it. And if we don't know, like we should do that work. I mean, a lot of us have a core erotic theme. For many women, it's to be dominated. Like we want to be more submissive in bed. We just do. We want to feel, it's that whole like forced sex fantasy. People are like, well, it's not that I want that, but we want to feel like our partner has so much unbridled love for us. They cannot stop themselves from having to ravish our bodies and just take us, right? That's really common, but it can be confusing. Like, throw me on the bed and then the person, like, I don't know how to throw her on the bed.
A safe word? I mean,
yeah, that's
that,
a safe word. If you're into like BDSM and stuff, you have like safe words around that. A lot of women, have same sex fantasies. They might just be a fantasy though. They don't necessarily want to act on it. There's two kinds of fantasies. Like there's the ones we just want to think about in our head. And then there's the ones we actually want to act on. And that's totally fine. We don't have to share every single thing with our partner.
How does it work bringing, we've talked a little bit about porn and toys and conversation. How about bringing a third person or more into the bedroom?
Yeah, I mean, very, very carefully. So that's the kind of thing you don't do that to spice up the relationship. Like maybe we should have a threesome to get things hot again or have a baby. Those things don't work, right? We're like, oh, we should have a baby and prepare it. I think you have to talk a lot about it. I mean, this is where you need to set boundaries and you need to say, I tell couples to role play it. Talk about it like there's someone in the room. Like right now I'm picturing she's here and she's kissing you, or watch porn with the threesome and talk about. And then if you finally get there and you decide, make sure that you're both attracted to the person. Is it going to be a man or a woman? What are the boundaries? Is penetration allowed? Is kissing allowed? Are they sleeping over? I mean, it seems like that would be counterintuitive to the, like making it hot. But the more couples are like locked down, we're in this, we've experienced, then I say proceed with caution.
Got it. Polly, tell us when you guys are coming up with your designs and products. I mean, I'm sure that this should be probably some kind of a sitcom of you guys in the, but making it up. But how do those, weekly team meetings go? I mean, somebody sits there and goes, I got a great idea for one. I mean, I'm guessing you guys use them. You have a lot of feedback. Tell us a little bit or a good story from one of the meetings that you've had in office or some of the experimentation that's gone on among your inventors.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really lucky in that we're speaking to a demographic that's really vocal. We have over, I want to say, like 95,000 followers on Instagram. And so we have a really vocal customer base that tells us a lot of the time what they want to see, what they want to try, what they want to do. We also look at like larger market trends and fashion trends and what's going on there. And then we also just pontificate in the office, like, well, at least once a month, get out wine, sit around in a circle, and talk about what we don't see happening and what we do see happening that we like. So I don't know that there's one specific... Oh, I actually do have one. We, for Bender the Vibrator, we decided we would post an Instagram and allow anyone to comment to name the product, and then we would put their Instagram handle on the packaging. And we thought maybe, like, I don't know, like 50 people would do it, and we had like close to 1,000 people comment with different names for what they thought the vibrator should be called. So I think it goes to show that people love to provide feedback, and that this is something that people want to talk about. They're just looking for somebody to give them permission.
Right. They want to be in part of this conversation. Okay. So because they're all listening to this conversation, we are going to do the divorce sucks interrogatories right now. Are you ladies ready?
Ready.
Okay. To each of you, and we'll go back and forth into who goes first. Emily first, what is your favorite breakup song?
Oh, God. I don't know my favorite breakup song.
I mean, Polly, you think about it while Emily's
okay,
thinking.
Okay, I can't think. Like, Love Stinks was the first one that came up, but I don't know why.
Love Stinks. Yeah, yeah. Love Stinks. Love Stinks.
Polly?
I think mine would be Dancing on My Own by Robin.
I keep dancing on my own.
Yeah.
It's such a classic, and I'm a big fan of the Pump Up Jam versus the sad song.
Yes.
Because, I don't know, music can put you in such a good mood.
I agree. And Dancing on My Own certainly is a good dovetail into masturbation with some of these toys. So.
The girls just want to have fun.
Girls Just Want to Have Fun is a good one. But by the way, listeners, the music you hear today is all on our Spotify playlist. And if you tap the link in our Insta bio to hear it and follow, you can listen to what these lovely ladies find to be their favorite breakup song. Polly, what would you say to cheer someone up going through a breakup or a divorce?
Honestly, this is going to sound a little emo, but like I don't know that it's about saying something to try to anticipate to cheer them up so much as it's just asking how they're doing and then offering to like come watch junkie like TV and bring over a bottle of red wine because everybody's different. And I don't really, I mean, like I'm definitely a jokester, but I think a lot of times it's just asking somebody, how are you doing? How are you feeling?
I like it.
Yeah, I would say that this is what I do. I'm always nursing people through breakups. I feel like you have to, I get them out. I get them out of the house. I'm like, we're just going to do something. We're going to get out. We're going to move our bodies. We're going to hike or we're going to go to a party when they're ready. And I just pull them into a new world, my world, whatever I'm doing to get them out of their heads and just meeting people again, just talking, men, women, just being social.
I like it. And Emily, what romantic comedy could you watch on repeat?
Oh, God. When Harry Met Sally.
Yep. That's a good one. How about you, Polly?
Mine's okay. I'll be delighted if either of you know that it's called Strictly Ballroom.
Yes,
from the 90s.
Oh my
you know
God!
It?
Look at Johnny over here. He's so excited. Yes, we've got our gay man who just fell off his chair. He's so excited. It's a good one. Yes.
Oh, that it's just eye candy, and the music's good, and it gets you up and moving, and it's just. Oh, I love Strictly Ballroom so much.
Yeah. And I like this because of the fake orgasm, which women do all fake orgasms. I tell them not to. If I get a proposition on the ballot, I'd be like, no on fake.
I'll have what she's having. I agree. From When Harry Met Sally. Polly and Emily, thank you so much for being here today on Divorce Sucks.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
So fun.
Tell us, Emily, first, how to keep up with you or find you online, please.
Okay. Everything's at sexwithemily.com. All of my social media is at sexwithemily. I release a podcast 3 times a week, wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'm live on SiriusXM 5 days a week, 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific on Stars 109.
Awesome. Polly?
We're just Unbound Babes on Instagram, and we're unboundbabes.com online.
Nice. Although it's always a little depressing to think about divorce, think back to that moment when you realized it would be better to be alone with a shot at happiness than together with your spouse and miserable. It doesn't have to be that way, and you can take my word for it and that of my guest today. We'd like to hear your thoughts about the show. What do you like, and what would you like to hear more of? Give us a quick review. We would appreciate it so much, and maybe your question or comment might be featured here next Monday when we're back here with more Divorce Sucks. Thanks for listening.